The solution to any problem, work, money, whatever, is to go fishing. And the worse the problem, the longer the time should be. That's from the website of Wisconsin Clearwater's chapter of Trout Unlimited, online at wcwtu.org. And joining us next on the Lee Rayburn Show is the president, Peter Jonas. And if you've got questions about trout fishing or trout streams, I want to invite you to join our conversation this half hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Peter Jonas, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Lee. I'm happy to be here.
So give us a little bit of an update. It is August, and how is our trout, and how are our trout streams?
For me, this is the most wonderful time of year to fish for trout because it is grasshopper season.
Okay, make that connection for me, Peter, please.
Well, trout feed quite heavily on all types of terrestrial insects, ants, beetles, but grasshoppers are the creme de la creme because they are a big bite, a lot of calories compared to the other insects that might find their way into a trout stream. So you can use larger flies, which for me as an angler of a certain age is a nice thing, be able to see the fly easily. The other thing is that trout will really move for them.
Really?
Yes. Sometimes if you're using a smaller insect, you have got to put it right in their feeding lane. But for grasshoppers, you can be a little sloppy. Sometimes actually being a little sloppy with your casting is an advantage, because if the fly goes splat on the water, that is a key to the trout. So it's a great way for beginners to fish.
Thank you for that. I have never been fly fishing before. It's always been a rod and reel, and I'm always a little reluctant to think of whether or not I could actually make a cast with fly fishing. How much work does it take to get off the ground?
I feel the best way to start learning how to fly cast is to fly cast on your lawn five or six times, seriously. And of course, you're going to attract comments from your neighbors, you know, how's the fishing and all of this kind of, which is just an added bonus. But it takes away the whole, you know, the water's moving, there are obstacles, everything else. And
takes the pressure out of it, because you know you're not going to catch anything on the front lawn.
Exactly. So you throw a baseball cap on the ground about 15, 20 feet away, and just keep trying to hit the thing with the end of your fly line. And you know, you can watch a number of YouTube videos for the basic technique of how to do that, and that's useful. But to do it about 10, 15 minutes a day for a week, so you don't, if you try to do it for an hour, you're gonna bust the fly rod over your knee, and fly rods are expensive, you don't want to do that. And so, you know, 10, 15 minutes, put it away, take it up the next day, and before long, you'll be casting.
Well, how long does grasshopper season last here, Peter? Because it seems like that window might be closing.
The funny thing about the last few seasons, and I think it is a bizarre, I hate to call it a benefit, but almost a bizarre benefit of global warming, which, of course, it's not a good thing. Don't want anybody thinking I think it's a good thing. But grasshopper season has just kind of gone on forever the last few years.
Oh, wow.
It has. Our trout season ends October 15th. And really, I've fished hoppers right up till almost that last week of the season, definitely through September and into the first week of October. So there's some time yet. I should mention one of the things about fishing in high summer that is very important is to carry a stream thermometer, because trout are very susceptible to high water temperatures. They're threatened by those. If water temperature is above 65 degrees, you really should quit fishing where you're fishing.
Above 65?
Mm-hmm.
So these are cold water.
Correct. trout are a cold water indicator species, and they don't handle high water temperatures well. They can get very stressed.
That's tough. It might be great for grasshopper season. It might be rough for the trout.
Well, you got to find the right balance of, you know, part of it is knowing what streams run colder that maybe have better thermal resiliency.
Sure.
Part of our brook trout reserves that the DNR is designated, one thing about those streams is that almost all of those streams are thermally resilient. That's one of the reasons why they're brook trout reserves, because brook trout require the coldest water of any of the trout we have in Wisconsin. But I just carry a cheap food thermometer, meat thermometer. Yeah. Because they make thermometers that are specifically for anglers, but generally you got to let them sit in the water for a while. I've got no patience, so I have an instant read thermometer.
I thought it was about being cheap.
Yeah, well, that too. No money and no patience, Lee. Yeah.
Peter Jonas, our guest, and we are trout fishing today. He is the president of Wisconsin Clearwater's chapter of Trout Unlimited, serving Northwest Wisconsin counties. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. And let's go to Porter in Sun Prairie. Hi, Porter.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you have for us?
So I mostly trout fish in the winter in Lake Michigan, but in the summer I get my fix for trout fishing for them in the creeks, inland Wisconsin. I don't fly fish. I do spinning gear, but I noticed this year in the trout regulation book that I pick up every year, and I look at the map and they have color coded as to what streams or creeks are, you know, classified as class 1, 2, and 3. And I noticed if you compare the two maps from last year and this year, there is a whole heck a lot of green and yellow and very little red, meaning that there's no hardly any class 1 streams anymore. Is there any reason why the DNR kind of demoted a lot of these streams to a class 2 or 3 as opposed to a 1?
Can I ask what area of the country or what area of the state you live in?
Yes, I live south central Wisconsin. I'm Madison area, so
okay.
I fish a lot of Dane County, Columbia County, and Grant County.
Okay. The stream classification, and I'm not a DNR employee or a spokesperson for the DNR. I do try to keep up on a little bit of this stuff, but just disclaimer there. But their stream classification system is by what they try to make objective standards. So a class 1 stream means that that stream supports natural reproduction of wild populations of trout. So that is kind of the bottom line. A class 2 stream may have some natural reproduction, but generally is considered where it might need a little stocking to enhance its fishery. And a class 3 stream is simply a put-and-take type of fishery where it can only support stocked fish, and it might not even support those fish through the whole season. So not knowing exactly what streams you're talking about, and I wouldn't recommend naming your secret spots over statewide radio broadcast.
That's going to be my next question for you, Peter.
It's hard to say. I do know that, you know, streams in the Dane County area are obviously going through a period where there's a great deal of development and intensive land use, and so that may be affecting how they are classifying some of these streams.
With less class 1 streams, does that suggest perhaps warmer waters than these fish can handle?
The class system is based not only on water temperature, but also, say, the quality of the substrate. So if it's primarily a heavily silted substrate where fish have difficulty reproducing, that might be a prime class 2 stream where it can support an adult population of trout, but it may not support a lot of natural reproduction. Mm-hmm. And, of course, water purity and so on and so
quality,
forth.
Quality, temperature,
yep.
substrate.
All of those
there
things.
Are a lot of things to consider, but it is an interesting observation, Porter, and I'd be interested to see where the DNR moves from this year to next year, considering where it moved in the last year. So thank you for sharing. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Josh in Green Bay next. Hi, Josh.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So a couple years ago, a parasite known to cause whirling disease in trout was found in Elton Creek at Silver Moon Springs Trout Farm. And that was because they were allowed to reroute all the water in Elton Creek into their ponds and then back out. And then the guy who won for the Republican governor last night was the guy who gave him a law to do that. Are there any other infestations of whirling disease in the state of Wisconsin other than the tributary waters of the Wolf River?
Josh, thank you. Whirling disease?
I have not heard anything about whirling disease, Josh, but one thing I do want to mention in regards to infestation of exotic species is that New Zealand mud snails were recently found in the Seas branch of Kickapoo Creek. And Seas branch is, I've fished that stream myself. It is a beautiful native brook trout stream. Absolutely gorgeous, runs into the west branch of the Kickapoo. Mm. New Zealand mud snails are a big problem because they really feast upon the very tiny micro life of the stream, the very bottom of the food chain. And they are basically undigestible by trout. So they are taking, if you will, food out of the food chain, and they're not passing it along to things that are bigger than themselves. So this has been an alarming development. And I see Lee has a bit of a puzzled look on his face about how New Zealand mud snails may have arrived.
It's a long ways away, Peter.
Yeah. unfortunately, I'm afraid this one is probably on us anglers, because New Zealand is a destination site for folks who can fish for trophy brown trout. There are incredible trout fishing opportunities in New Zealand, and and people who have the capacity to fish internationally. And I think it is a testament to how popular the Driftless region has become that people who fish all around the world fish in the Driftless. And it probably, I mean, I'm only speculating at this point, but it's likely that they arrived in some sediment that was on the bottom of somebody's wading boots. That's a likely cause in this scenario. It underscores the importance of thoroughly cleaning your wading boots and your waders after you've been fishing somewhere where there are probably anywhere, frankly, but particularly if you fish somewhere where there have been forms of life that we're trying not to pass on, exotic species, this sort of thing. So, yeah, that certainly is a big issue. Whirling disease that is first sprung up out west on the Madison River has come to our area through the situation Josh mentioned, and now we're dealing with New Zealand mud snail, so we've got some issues here.
I got to tell you, I did not know that our trout were so... It feels like they're coming at you from just about every angle, from the environment to the invasive species to the disease. You feel like... I'm worried about our trout, Peter.
Good. I'll tell you, before I get into some of the details of this must be the bad news section of the show at the moment here. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that people come to care about the environment and advocate for the environment and change their behavior more out of love than out of guilt.
Yeah.
I mean, guilt can motivate, but when someone falls in love, whether it is fishing for trout or whether it is rock climbing or following butterflies, whatever it takes, That I like to think is a portal to start to see larger and larger concentric circles of connections and to really make an environmentalist. And of course, this is the Wisconsin idea, really, mm-hmm. with Aldo Leopold. You think about how he integrated his own personal experience as mm-hmm. a hunter and an angler with his scientific research. And so I'm glad you're concerned about our trout because they are worthy of our concern. And
there's reason to be concerned.
Yes, absolutely.
Here's another one that came up on our show about a week ago, and I did not think this would be a contentious issue, but Jeff in Bayfield's on the line, and he's going to lay it out for us. Jeff, hi. Jeff, are you there?
Thanks for the show. Three or four years ago, I attended a beaver trout one-day conference in Hayward, Wisconsin, and I wonder if our guest could update me and our listeners on the latest scientific data on trout versus beaver. I know Wisconsin DNR is currently updating the beaver management plan, a 10-year plan. Just wonder if you had any new information on the beaver trout controversy.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for throwing me that question that I'm certain is going to get me into hot water with somebody. So
there's no right answer here, yeah. Peter. But we talked about this about a week ago.
Yes.
And there is varying opinions on this, and there is, you know, the question about how to coexist. You talk about the interconnectedness and how important that is and how there's a balance in nature and whether or not we are reinforcing that balance or putting that balance out of whack and how we can respect the populations of both wild species in a way that defends their habitat as well as their existence.
Exactly. And I do want to direct your attention, Jeff, to if you go to the Wisconsin Public Radio site, to Lee's site, there is the interview of a couple fellows, I forget their name, that are definitely in the beaver believer camp,
mm-hmm.
and they presented very well, I felt, their position on all of the advantages that beavers can bring to an ecosystem. For myself, I don't share the real, some trout anglers absolutely just loathe beavers. And
I learned that last week.
Yeah. I consider myself neither a beaver believer nor a believer hater. I consider myself beaver curious, that I think there are lots of different ways that trout interact with beavers and beavers interact with a watershed that we don't fully understand. I will say there is a scientist, Matt Mitro, at the Wisconsin DNR, who has done some outstanding research. One of the things that Matt has done in his recent search of Elk Creek in the Driftless is that, at least in that setting, in an agricultural setting, beaver dams were a very real impediment to fish passage. And I think sometimes some of the research that comes from what we'll call the beaver believer end of things is often done on Western trout streams, which are very different geographically than our Midwestern streams that are often in an agricultural environment or in a Northwoods environment. I think something that would be helpful to kind of turn down the adversarial rhetoric and arrive at more constructive solutions is I would love to see us really focus on individual cases, like an individual watershed, and do some hard research about how beavers might affect it. I do point people to Matt Mitro's work. I think I think your guest last week, just they're not here to defend themselves. I think they were a bit tough on the DNR because I think I think the DNR has really done some serious research on this subject that if it hasn't been peer-reviewed, would certainly pass peer-review muster. So that's my thought about that. Finally, just a personal note. I fish some streams with a lot of beavers in them, which I don't mind, but I do wish they had more social awareness because they're... Their eyesight is terrible, and I've had a couple instances where they've just, like, swam right up to me and then wheeled a 360, and my old heart's getting a little...
I was going to say, maybe they knew exactly what they were doing, Peter.
My old heart is getting a little fragile for that that kind of scenario, and or if you get a tail slap when you don't know they're there, It is unnerving, but
Jeff, I'm glad you called, and I'm glad you asked, and that was a wonderful answer, Peter. So thank you for that, and personal too. So let's go to Tu Yang next in Madison. Tu Yang, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. When I think of trout fishing, especially growing up, I imagine the fly rod and the dry fly. But growing up, I realized that there's more than one way to fish for trout. In particular, using a spinning rod and reel. And I'm wondering if your guest can talk more about the different methods that fishermen and fisherwomen can use to catch trout.
Thanks a lot for that question. I am happy to do that. One of the things I think that Trout Unlimited could do a better job at is to really reinforce the idea that we are not a fly fishing organization. That's a lot of our ethos, and a lot of our members do, in fact, fly fish. But Trout Unlimited is intentionally not a fly fishing organization. And I think we have really burned or damaged bridges that we shouldn't burn or damage by people getting into conflicts about one method of fishing is better. I'm personally for whatever method of fishing gets you outside and gets you...
Just fishing is best.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Fish. It solves a multitude of... My grandmother used to say she never met a bad boy who fished. I sort of feel that in my own personal experience, I've seen that disproven at times. But,
yes, but the point is well taken.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do that. So, for example, even in grasshopper season, while I do think a fly rod is quite advantageous in that circumstance, you can, with a casting bubble, put a fly on a spinning rod, and you've got enough weight to cast it out there, and that is one way you can fish for trout. Another, people are very, I see people very effectively using spinners of various sizes for trout. I think some methods are starting to come together. For example, there are people who are, their passion is kind of headhunting, fishing for very large trout in some of our downstream areas. With a spinning rod, they might fish with a very large rapala. And now we have fly anglers who are fishing streamer flies that are like the size of a large rapala with a little heavier fly rod. And it's a very interesting, the methods are not that dissimilar from each other. So
interesting.
Yeah. So we have some ways of doing that. In the steelhead and brown trout, the fish that run out of Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, there's a form of fishing called centerpin, which actually I have dabbled in a little bit myself, that you fish with a reel that sort of looks like a fly rod reel, very long rod. You cast a float, and you can... The thing that attracted me was I was out on the Brule one day watching someone with one of these centerpin rods, and I had drift envy. The person could make a drag-free drift that was so long. It was like a good 150 yards. And, I'm getting like 15 yards adrift on my fly rod, and I thought, this is killing me.
I got to try this. Peter, we are out of time, but we have so much more to talk
about. We're out of time.
Look at that. That went by so quick, as fishing often does. Sir, I invite you back anytime. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Peter Jonas is president of the Wisconsin Clearwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited, serving the counties of Northwest Wisconsin. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.